Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast on this 27th, amazingly, it's 27th of May, 2017. As we discuss the world of sports and pop culture, as always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or go to my Instagram page at Rillo Gerald Quinn. We have, of course, a new opening thanks to one Craig, I don't know why he still calls it. Does he still call himself? He has to get back to me. I wonder if he still calls himself Beat Smith. But Craig Beat Smith for that hot, you know, hot beat and that, you know, it's time for a new opening anyway. We were long overdue for a new opening, so I just ran to the opportunity to get something new in, and it is a, you know, it's a talented dude. So again, thanks to Craig Beat Smith providing us with a new opening. A lot to talk about on this. Just again, I can't, as much complaining as we have done from that I've done about the weather, especially in April. The last couple weeks in April, the weather with the cold and the rain was awful. There's another beautiful, gorgeous Saturday afternoon or morning, soon to be afternoon, especially down here in the DMV. I can't complain at all. You know, get out here and enjoy some of the springtime weather before it gets 95 with humidity. Now again, you got the cicadas. Cicadas are back, so, and that tells me how long I've been down here. As you know, cicadas come around every 13 to 17 years. Last time we saw the cicadas, it was 2004. So they're back, but they're not as bad as they were in 2004. I felt like the cicadas in 2004 was, you know, fly hitting you in the face. Now I see them, and they're already dead, laying on the ground. But anyway, let me move on with the cicada talk. Let me begin with the narratives of this upcoming NBA Finals, which will take place, again, June 1st, Thursday, starting at Golden State, of course, at Oracle. Golden State having the best record in the league. Cleveland, this will be the third straight year, not only that Cleveland meets Golden State, but that Cleveland opens the series at Golden State. So there's been nothing new to them to open the series on the road, as the Golden State Warriors have had the best record, three-year record of any team, even the 96-98 Chicago Bulls in NBA history. But again, nobody cares about that if they don't finish the job and win a championship. But when you look at the narratives to this series, you know, everybody's talking about LeBron versus Jordan. Everybody's going to talk about Kevin Durant. You know, even the Mike Brown, Steve Kerr going to coach. And I'm telling you right here, right now, I've been saying this for the last 2 weeks, Steve Kerr will be coaching the Golden State Warriors. I'm telling you, Steve Kerr, and again, I will repeat it, Steve Kerr will be coaching the Golden State Warriors. Okay? All this, you know, is he coaching and it's not confirmed? He went to San Antonio. He spoke in the locker room. He's been in the locker room. He's basically lived in the locker room. Like, if you're Mike Brown, you're just enjoying the ride. Steve Kerr will coach the game. It's nothing official yet, but I would be shocked if Steve Kerr is not coaching Golden State game one Thursday night. I'd be shocked. So that could be a storyline. You know, the Mike Brown, LeBron could be one of the storylines. One of the narratives that I'm focusing on and nobody really is talking about is the Steph Curry redemption tour. So last year, Steph Curry came into the playoffs as coming off one of the great regular seasons in NBA history. I mean, he was unreal. He leads, you know, best player on a team that wins 73 games, unanimous MVP, scores 24 points in the first half of the Houston game, the first round. Then next thing you know, in that second quarter, before, and even had 24 points before the half was over, he gets hurt late in that second quarter. and never was the same in the playoffs. I mean, let's be honest. He never was the same. Got hurt again in a series where I think he slipped on some ice and never was the same player. And that carried him through onto the NBA Finals where not only did he lose the NBA Finals, LeBron James eviscerates him as clearly the best player in the world. He comes up, Curry doesn't even play well in the Finals. He gets outplayed by Kyrie Irving, and on top of it, has Kyrie Irving hit the game-winning three in his face. And matter of fact, had Cleveland went out their way to make sure that they switched, that they got the switch and got Stephen Curry on Kyrie Irving and Klay Thompson off him. So it was you couldn't have a worse postseason for an MVP, for a guy who was about to take over the league than Stephen Curry had. Now this year he's going about his business quietly. Durant's got all the accolades or all the criticism. You know, he's kind of been laying in the weeds this year. Had a great end to the season. I thought he was, you know, I thought he was the third best player in the league down the stretch. Well, at least when end of the season, the third or fourth best player in the league down the stretch behind all the MVP candidates, and definitely deserved to be fifth. I would put him fifth in my MVP candidates behind the big four, but has played great in his playoffs. He's looked as good as he's been even in his MVP season, to be honest with you. So this is a big series for Stephen Curry because he hasn't had that definitive final series. He's had moments. He's had a game here and a game there. Had a great game four last year in the finals. Had a good game six in 2015, but he has not had that moment, those moments. He hasn't had two dominant games in a row, two consecutive good games in the finals. When you look over the course of the last 2 years in the NBA Finals. So, to me, that is the guy that I'm watching in these NBA Finals, Stephen Curry. I want to see how he responds. Did you see the response that the reaction of Kyrie Irving when they first asked about Golden State, like as he were just basically licking his chops? I mean, Kyrie Irving believes in his heart, and I believe you gave Kyrie Irving a lot of tech that he believes that he's a better player than Steph Curry. He really does. And you know what? If I was Kyrie Irving based off last year and based off what happened and Christmas Day, I probably would believe that I'm better than Steph Curry too. So we'll see what happens with that. But again, that is the main narrative to what hopefully is an epic series. I'm not one of these people that says that this series is going to be all-time classic. That sure, we're looking forward to it, but I'm cautious about this series because I've been let down by these playoffs. It's been some of the worst playoffs in the history of that I've ever seen in terms of competitiveness. We knew what two teams were going to be in there, were going to be in the finals. There was just no resistance, none whatsoever by any team in the East or the West. Caught a bad break, of course, with Kawhi Leonard, Tony Parker and Kawhi Leonard, specifically Kawhi Leonard. But we'll see what happens with that. We will have shows on Thursday. Probably do a pre or post game on Thursday night as we get ready and near game one of the NBA Finals. 347-215-6180 is your call number. A lot to do on this beautiful Saturday morning. We'll be right back on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. Again, we're going to get – I finally watched the Empire season's finale. I had to stay off social media for, from Wednesday on, basically, because you know, you guys would have just completely spoiled it. But I was able to watch it yesterday afternoon. I will give you my thoughts on that season finale. We'll talk about some, you know, we'll give a twin, talk about Twin Peaks. A big month of shows coming up in June, in particular in June, July. You have Power, and also you have, of course, Game of Thrones. Power, of course, is starting a couple weeks, about 3 weeks earlier, anticipating the Game of Thrones that's just going to just destroy everything in its way in terms of the ratings. So 50 Cent had to make that move to push Power up. But again, we'll talk about the Empire season finale. It was interesting, to say the least. I'll just leave it at that. Enos Kanter just can't stay out the news. Last week we were on this program. Enos Kanter was trapped in Turkey because his passport had been revoked based off some political comments that he made about the government. Now he's later, you know, a week later, he's back in the United States, and they've, you know, from thousands of miles away. I don't know how far Turkey is, but I'm sure it's far from where Enos Kanter is right now. And where he's at in the United States, but they've issued a warrant for his arrest. And Enos Kanter goes on Twitter or Instagram and basically, you know, kind of talks about the government, makes fun of the country. You're Enos Kanter, you know, you just, I know that's your hometown, your home country, but I probably wouldn't go near Turkey for maybe a couple of years. And I mean, you know, overseas, you know, it's not like America where you can just say whatever you want. You know, we have a lot of complaints about America. The one thing about America that I'll always love is you can basically say what you want. The freedom of speech thing in America is the greatest, you know, is one of the benefits, you know, one of the many or few benefits, depending on your perspective, of being an American. You can basically say what you want, no matter, you can be a LeVar Ball and just make these idiotic comments on basketball, on, you know, your sons and what have you, or about the government when you talk about Trump. Over there, over those countries, might want to put a muzzle on your mouth, because you, like, these countries take that type of stuff seriously. And if I mean it's cancer, you can say what you want, but just say it while you're in America. Don't go over there saying it. Like, keep your opinions to yourself while you're in Turkey. But I wouldn't, again, if I'm Enos Kanter, I wouldn't go anywhere near Turkey for the foreseeable future. I mean, seriously, at this point, I kind of fear for his safety if he goes over there. So that, you know, that situation is ongoing. I don't anticipate that he'll be going over there anytime soon, but it would be years before I even thought about making an appearance in Turkey, if I'm in his Canada. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Three major sporting events coming up in the next 2 days or so. You have the Indianapolis 500 coming up, you know, Sunday, of course, on Monday. Sunday afternoon. Let me get that right. Sunday afternoon, Stanley Cup Monday, French Open Sunday. So I'll get to in regards to the French Open again. I barely touched on this because we had a lot of things to deal with on the program. But the idea, it is embarrassing that Roger Federer is not playing in the French Open for the sport of tennis. Here's a guy, and I'm a Federer fanatic. I love Roger. I like Roger Federer, without question, to me, is the greatest tennis player of all time. And has been one of the dominant athletes of this era, of this generation, easily. But, you know, it's bad for the sport because Nadal's, and to me, like, I'm not going to give you any deep analysis because nobody here cares about tennis. Let's be honest. No Serena. She's pregnant. So forget about the women. And don't even Sharapova. I mean, this is where tennis doesn't get it. If Serena's out of the tournament and you're the French Open, you need somebody to draw attention to watch. Maybe they're at a point where they just say, you know what, nobody's going to watch anyway, so we're just going to keep Sharapova out because she's coming off the drug suspension. I want Sharapova in the tournament if I'm tennis, if I'm the WTA, in the worst way, to draw people to watch the matches. But anyway, nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to care about the women's game, especially without Serena. As far as the men's game, listen, you had a chance to have a legit big four with Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, and Andy Murray. You really had a chance to have a, to have something special there, because I believe Federer would have done cause some serious damage. Now, Federer is taking the smart approach, the safe and smart approach. I'm not going to risk my body for the. I'm not going to risk my body. I want to win Wimbledon more than I want to win the French Open and the U.S. Open more than I want to win the French Open. And the fact is, his chances of winning the French Open versus Wimbledon and versus U.S. Open, you know, are considered, you know, are not good. So I understand what Federer is doing, but to me, he was playing so well. I wanted to see Federer in the French Open play against go match up against Nadal or Djokovic or even Murray. So right now, I mean, you're going to get more than likely, and I haven't looked at the draw. I know Murray's second. Excuse me. I know Murray's ranked number one. Djokovic is two, and Nadal is seeded four. So I think, depending on what the draw, the way it's set up, you're probably going to have Djokovic and Nadal in the semi. I'm guessing in the semifinals. So Murray will only have to play one of those guys. I'm guessing. Haven't looked at the draw yet as far as where they you know where they are pitted. In terms of where they're placed, because every year it changes. It changes depending on the tournament and the ranking. So that's a bad, again. We criticize the NBA players for taking off. But you have this dude, the greatest tennis player of all time, missing a major, which prior to this, the only time he had missed a major was due to an injury. The guy had been an Ironman before he missed last year. He missed last year's French Open because he was hurt. So that was legitimate. This year, you know, he's taking it off because he doesn't believe he can win, number one. And two, he wants to save himself for Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. Federer wants another Wimbledon in the worst way. I know the Australian Open is nice, but it is kind of like the stepbrother of all the Grand Slams. Like, it's the least popular and least heralded of all the Grand Slams by far. It's not even close. To the three other Grand Slams. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Boston and San Antonio went out this week. We will discuss the futures of the Boston Celtics and the San Antonio Spurs. That's coming up and much, much more in this latest edition of the Cyril Joaquin Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. To this latest edition of the Cyril Joaquin Sports Podcast. Got into a bit of a Twitter battle. I wouldn't say fight, but Twitter battle yesterday in regards to the NBA and LeBron and Michael and Kobe. So not going to get into the details of it. It was nothing like a good sports argument, especially a basketball argument. And, you know, this is really, in terms of how many great players we've seen in the last 15, 20 years, it has been, you know, a kind of a golden era with like the likes of Kobe, LeBron, Tim Duncan, the likes of those three guys in particular. But my response to that particular argument would be this right here. It's old. It's kind of old, but it happened. So that is my fan. That's kind of like my protest. The 2009-2010 back-to-back Los Angeles Lakers, who, I don't know, may not win a championship again could be another 10 to 15 years. Who knows? It'll be sooner, but had a little fun with that Facebook argument. Facebook, Twitter, they all the same to me. But Facebook argument yesterday afternoon, yesterday evening. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just in regards to the Stanley Cup, because I know hockey, again, to my hockey fans out there, I have to actually just absolutely apologize because I'm actually a Pittsburgh Penguins fan. I've been so enthralled with the NBA. I've watched Pittsburgh games. Now, that was a great, great Game 7 win by the Pittsburgh Penguins. In double overtime, Kunitz with a missile to beat Anderson, and that would have been a devastating loss to lose Game 7 at home for the right to go to the Stanley Cup. That would have been a tough one, even coming off a championship. So Pittsburgh is back in the finals against Nashville, who, of course, is led by P.K. Subban, who was, of course, involved in that trade, that heralded trade in the offseason with Shea Weber. Nashville is a team that a lot of people don't know a lot about. Pittsburgh single-handedly saved the Stanley Cup this year, because if you had Ottawa and Nashville, nobody would be watching that series. No one. At least Pittsburgh, you have a team led by a iconic player in Sidney Crosby, great player in Malkin. They have some named guys, you know, Phil Kessel. You got Matt Murray. So they have some named guys that maybe the casual fan could get into. I'll certainly watch it from not only because this is what I do, but, you know, as a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, as they try to become the second, you know, only the first franchise since Detroit to go back-to-back. It's hard to go back-to-back in the NHL. It does not happen often. I mean, it's almost been 20 years since the team. It's hard. I mean, teams don't even get back. Teams that win the Cup don't even get back to the finals, the conference finals, let alone the Stanley Cup finals. So this is, you know, a tremendous accomplishment by the Pittsburgh Penguins, to say the least. So we'll be looking forward to that. Again, a lot going on this Memorial Day weekend as we head into the official start of summer. 347-215-6180 is your call number. So Boston and San Antonio have two championship franchises, have some decisions to make moving in the offseason. Begin with Boston. Boston has a bunch of guards and no superstars on that team. It was clear the difference. I'll say this right now. I give Boston a lot of credit for fighting. Brad Stevens, and I posted this a couple of days ago, Brad Stevens is a top coach in this league. Once Greg Popovich retires, Brad Stevens, to me, will be the next in line as the best coach in the NBA. I really believe that. I mean, that guy is a tremendous coach, motivator, X's and O's. He's a complete coach. He got the most out of that team with the injury, with Isaiah being hurt, and with just they're just not that talented. They're really not. I mean, you really look. They have a bunch of number fours on their team. Maybe Horford's a third best player on a championship team, but they don't have a lot of talent. They have a lot of nice pieces, and they fought Cleveland tooth and nail. The first two games, I just think they were just shell shocked about that level of play. They wasn't ready for an Eastern Conference final, for a conference final level, considering they have been eliminated in the previous 2 years in the first round. So they just wasn't ready for that level of play. Once they got their feet wet, they really were competitive with Cleveland. Now, last game was standing as Cleveland was just ready to get it over with. But they have some interesting decisions to make because you have the number one pick. You also have a late second round, first round pick. You have all these assets. You have guys who you know probably are not going to be on your team in the next couple of years, whether it be Isaiah Thomas or Avery Bradley. They have to make a decision on both those guys. And to me, if I'm running that franchise, I would have to move because they have some great contracts. Isaiah Thomas's contract, Bradley's contract, and Jay Crowder are three great contracts for what they can do. All three of those guys are underpaid, are being paid below market value. You can move those pieces and get a guy like Jimmy Butler, and not even trade the pick. They have guys stashed over in Europe who are going to replace like a Jarepko, who are going to replace Olenek, Amir Johnson, who are going to replace guys like that. So they already have that plan in place. So the question is, can they trade for a big name player and also sign Gordon Hayward? You bring back a team with you draft Markelle Fultz, you have Jaylen Brown, you have Gordon Hayward, you have Jimmy Butler, you have some of the two European players you have coming back over who they say are better players than the role players that they're gonna be that they'll lose. You have a Horford. You know, you'll go to battle with that team. And remember, they have, again, Brooklyn's number one pick next year. So Danny Ainge has some tough decisions to make. There's no way in the world that I would extend Isaiah, that I would re-sign Isaiah Thomas. I'm sorry, I cannot sign a 5'7 point guard, 30 years old. I can't give him $180 million. He's just not going to do it. Like, you can't. That will hamstring your franchise for the next 4 or 5 years. And again, I know he's popular. Fans love him. He's one of the most popular Celtics. He might be the most popular Celtic since Larry Bird. I mean, he's that popular in Boston. He really is. But I can't give that guy, I can't give him, and especially coming off this injury as well. This hip, who knows, this was a major hip injury. We can't, matter of fact, he hasn't been able to get surgery yet because the swelling hasn't gone down. As far as San Antonio goes, I was on the trade machine this week trying to figure out trades for LaMarcus Aldridge, who would fit. Then the Chris Paul situation, the Chris Paul rumors come up. San Antonio has to shake up their, like, they, I almost think you might have to get rid of LaMarcus Aldridge. I think mentally he's at that point where he's not going to fit into what they do. And they might have to just cut their losses. Again, he still has value because I can move him to an Eastern Conference team. He could be a 2010 guy in the Eastern Conference easily. Now, again, the Chris Paul thing, that, you know, a lot of things have to happen from a cap standpoint for San Antonio to get him on the team. San Antonio, we know how smart of an organization they are. They can make that happen. The question is, to me, what do you do with LaMarcus Aldridge? You can get Chris Paul. That's if Chris Paul is willing to take $50 million less. I have to believe that before I can believe it. Remember, Chris Paul is eligible to receive a $205 million contract, a contract that he and LeBron negotiated with the CBA, with this past CBA agreement for guys like Chris Paul and LeBron James. So I have to see Chris Paul walk away from $50 million. San Antonio could sign him for 4 years at about San Antonio could sign Chris Paul for about 4 years, $150 million. The Clippers could sign him for about 5 years, $205 million. I don't care how many State Farm commercials you're making, $50 million is $50 million. And again, I know Chris Paul is on a million State Farm commercials. I don't think he's receiving $50 million over State Farm money. I'll tell you that. So those two teams have, again, interesting decisions to make. I think LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be moved. That's just I haven't heard anything, but that's just my opinion, to be honest with you. I think they're going to move Aldridge. I think the two-year experiment is over. They're probably stuck with Tony Parker unless they went for another year. They're probably stuck with Paul Gasol for another year. I see they both those guys have player options. Neither one of those guys are gonna jump out their contracts. They'll be worth well over $15-16 million apiece. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition. Again, broadcasting here live from my apartment, and soon we have a big announcement. We have a big announcement coming up about our location, about our broadcast location. That's coming up later in the program. I talked to some people. We have some things going on in the works. And I think I'm excited about it, and I know you're going to be excited about it as a listening audience, especially down in the DMV. That's coming up and much, much more in this latest edition of the Sir Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. As we discuss the world of sports and pop culture, we still got again a lot to do on this program. We're still going to get to Empire season's finale, Twin Peaks. I also have watched the first three episodes of that. The first four episodes are available. I think that was a smart choice by them because there's just so much going on with that show. It's so layered and just a little weird. But that's Twin Peaks. So we'll get to that. But the NFL made news this week, a lot of NFL news this week, especially considering it to be late May. First of all, the NFL, again, is going to shorten a couple of things in terms of the rules. They're going to shorten the overtime from 15 to 10 minutes. And they're going to do that in the preseason as well. The second thing is they're apparently going to allow more celebrations, more touchdown. And they're encouraging now touchdown end zone celebrations, with the exception of, the slam dunk in the goalpost or anything like twerking, and no Antonio Brown. So they're banning Antonio Brown celebrations. But here's the thing about the NFL. Here's the thing about Roger Goodell. And I look, and those of you who are much older than me will get this reference, but Roger Goodell is kind of like Kingfish from Amos and Andy. I mean, he really is. You can't be trusted. I mean, you really cannot be trusted because there's always an alternative motive to what Roger Goodell is doing. Don't be fooled by this. This is not about the players. Roger Goodell, you think Roger Goodell cares about the players or about his relationship with the players? This guy is making $35 to $40 million a year. I'm telling you right now, if I'm making $35 to $40 million a year, you can hate me all you want. Please hate me. Hate me. If I'm looking at my checkbook, my bank account, and I see a check for $40 million a year on my tax returns, please hate me. So Roger Goodell could care less about what you think about him. I mean, he doesn't. Roger Goodell and the rest of the NFL, the NFL brass, the powers that be, want you to focus more on this nonsense of scheduling, of overtime, and twerking, because they want you to take your eyes off CTE and player injuries and things of that nature. That's all it is. I mean, that is a clear diversion. I mean, I'm thinking about this. So you cut the overtime from 15 to 10 minutes. Now again, a lot can happen in 5 minutes. An injury can happen in one play. So that will reduce the chances of some injuries. But if you really care about player safety, then cut over. Why would you even entertain playing overtime in a preseason game? Like I do some games over at SiriusXM for baseball on spring training, some spring training baseball games. You know what happens when after 9 innings the game is tied? They stop playing. Okay, they don't play. They don't play extra innings during preseason baseball, during spring training baseball. So to me, if you care about player safety, eliminate overtime during preseason. So again, don't be fooled by Roger Goodell. Like I said, he is the equivalent. He is a 2017 version of Kingfish. I'm telling you, I wouldn't trust you. You shook his hand, you have to just wash it. For obvious reasons, not for just sanitary reasons, but I just wouldn't trust them. I just don't trust them or the rest of the powers that be in the NFL. I mean, please, they could care less about these players. And again, this idea that you think players are going to like Roger Goodell because he allows them to do a couple end zone celebrations, doesn't get penalized for dancing in the end zone, or doesn't get penalized for using props. So I saw that this week, and what's behind this? I mean, it's because it's not player safety. It's not player safety at all. Also with the NFL, because this was a lot. This teams are now getting into OTA mode. They pretty much started that this week. Started last week. So the Giants and Odell Beckham, Mr. Odell Beckham Jr., who recently was the beneficiary of the largest NFL shoe deal in the history of pro football, $25 million, 5 years for $25 million from Nike. And again, it just goes to show you where the NFL is at in comparison to other sports when it comes to endorsements. I mean, NFL guys in the NFL don't make anywhere near what soccer players make, what the NBA players make in terms of endorsements. It's not even close. Even tennis players. I mean, Roger Federer's endorsements destroy anybody's endorsements in the NFL. So, and the NFL wants that because they promote the league. They don't promote individual players like the NBA markets its superstars. The NFL doesn't, and there's a reason why the NFL doesn't market their superstars. They don't want guys to get, they don't want players like Odell Beckham or Tom Brady or even Antonio Brown. They don't want those guys to get bigger than the league. It is by design. You know, the quote unquote the shield. But anyway, Odell Beckham, who doesn't need any more reason to be empowered, decides to skip first week of OTAs. Eli Manning's there. All the Giants, with the exception of Olivier Vernon's there. And again, the typical excuses, the typical cover up, kissing Odell Beckham's ass. So for an organization that is a four-time Super Bowl champion winner, for an organization that is one of the great historic organizations not only in the NFL but in sports. The New York Giants are one of the crown jewel organizations in all the sports. And for whatever reason, they are beholden to this guy who has not won a playoff game, and a guy who in the Green Bay game was awful, might have been one of the worst players on the field, was a bad player in that particular game that the Giants lost. So this is the guy. So he's, again, this is the guy who you are beholden to for whatever reason. And again, the Giants continuously make excuses for him. Well, it's voluntary. Well, it's not voluntary. Everybody knows it's voluntary. Wink, wink. It's not voluntary. It's not voluntary. It's not voluntary OTAs. That's why everybody, if it's voluntary, then why is everybody there? I mean, you have everybody showed up for the Giants OTAs with the exception of Odell Beckham Jr. and Olivier Vernon. So again, if I were the Giants, I would cut my losses and move on. Receivers. It is not hard. Big time receivers are not winning Super Bowls. You don't build your team around a receiver. You don't. That's not how you build your team. How many championships does Terrell Owens have? How many championships does Randy Moss have? How many Super Bowl appearances does those guys even have? But Terrell, I know Randy Moss has two, with the one with New England and one with San Francisco. But again, the bottom line is that's not a position that you have to, that's not a necessary position when you're building a football team. It's just not. So again, he's going to be, if you thought it was bad last year with his behavior, wait until 2017, wait until September, wait until the season starts with the new contract, with the new shoe deal. And again, you just allow this guy to do whatever he wants. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Sir Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Back to this latest edition of the Sir Joe Quinn Sports Podcast as we get ready for, again, a NBA Finals matchup between Golden State and Cleveland, the first time ever in NBA history that we've had the same three teams meet three times. Amazingly, the Bulls, excuse me, not the Bulls, the Lakers and Celtics never met three straight years during the 80s. The Celtics had, matter of fact, the Celtics, they met in 84. So they met in 84 and 85 where they split. Celtics winning in 84. Lakers winning in 85. 86, of course, when the Celtics, both of them have gone at least three straight times. Lakers went four straight times from 82 to 85. And they won in 82, lost in 83, lost in 84, and won in 85. So they went four straight years. The Celtics went in 86, 87, 80. Well, Celtics also went four straight years, too. So Celtics went from 84 to 87. So they went 84, 85, 86, 87. And they split. They won in 84 and 86, lost in 87 and 85. So, again, amazingly, in a decade where both teams went to the finals at least four straight times individually, they never met three straight times as opponents. And again, remember that. I mean, again, that decade was dominated by Magic and Bird. Not Magic and Bird. Matter of fact, there was not a year in the 80s. There was not a year where either the Celtics or the Lakers were not in the finals. From the 1980 finals to the 1989 finals, either it was the Celtics or Lakers in those particular in the NBA finals. Lakers winning five championships, the Celtics winning three. And the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, the people who are one who the people and I'll say it, ESPN, TNT, whoever, the people who want to promote and build up these finals and want to promote this age of basketball and this domination by Golden State and Cleveland are missing one thing when they say that we've seen this before with dominant teams, whether it's Jordan's Bulls, Shaq and Kobe's Lakers, you know, the Celtics back in the 80s, Lakers, 80s, Celtics, you know, in the 60s and 50s with Russell. Here's the difference. Those teams faced adversity over the course of the playoffs. Those teams faced, there was a little resistance. Okay? There was a little resistance with those teams. Like, in the 80s, you had the Philadelphia. The Philadelphia 76ers, in a different decade, maybe may have been the dominant team. In a different, they weren't going for the Celtics or Lakers. I mean, those Sixers teams, you know, Dr. J and Maurice Cheeks, Andrew Toney, Moses Malone, those were loaded. That was a loaded Philadelphia team that won a championship in 83 and lost to the Lakers in 82. Houston Rockets had some good teams. Utah Jazz had some good teams. I mean, the Lakers and Celtics played seven-game series leading up to the finals during that decade. I go back to the 90s with the Bulls. Those Knicks, the Knicks could have beat the Bulls twice. The Knicks took the Bulls to a seven-game series in 92. Could have beat them in 93 when that, you know, the Charles Smith, you know, Memorial in that game five ended up losing six games. Pacers took the Bulls to game seven in 98, almost beat them down by like five with like a couple minutes to play in Chicago in the game seven. There's no resistance. Like, there's no – have like, these two teams have not been challenged, okay, during these three years. I mean, you see Cleveland's record is like – they're like 33-5 in the Eastern Conference since LeBron returned to Cleveland. There's been one challenger this 3 years for both these teams, and that was Oklahoma OKC last year, who should have beat Golden State. One in 3 years. I mean, you look at the last – I'm looking at it right here. So look at the last five – I'm looking at the last 6 years in the NBA in terms of teams that could win a championship. And I'm looking at it right here. So I'm going back to 2012. I'll say 2012 you had Miami, Boston, Chicago, OKC, San Antonio. 2013, you had Miami, San Antonio, OKC. 2014, you had San Antonio, Miami, Indiana, OKC, the Clippers. 2015, you had Cleveland, Chicago, San Antonio, the Clippers, Golden State. Last year you had OKC, San Antonio, Cleveland, and Golden State. So there have been, the last 4 to 5 years, there have been at least anywhere from 3 to 5 teams who you can make a case whether you want to believe it or not, that could probably win a championship or who are worthy of being mentioned in that conversation. This year, there were two teams. Maybe two and a half if you want to count San Antonio. So let's say two and a half. That's not good for the NBA. I mean, that's not, you know, it's one thing for Golden State and Cleveland to meet in the finals. It's another thing for them not to be pushed whatsoever once they go to the, in order for them to get to the finals, in their path to get to the finals. I mean, I don't even know if this series could save the NBA playoffs. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest with you. That's how bad the playoffs have been. Like, you better have three overtime games, a game seven, Steph Curry hits a 30-foot three, LeBron comes back with a half-court shot, that type of ending, in order for this series to salvage the playoffs. That's how bad the playoffs have been. You had two game sevens. One game seven was by with two teams that we know had no chance to even get to the finals in Boston and the Wizards. And the other game seven was a blowout and an embarrassing performance by the Los Angeles Clippers at home against Utah. Those were your game sevens. Those were your game sevens. I mean, look at the blowouts in game sixes. I mean, Washington manhandled Atlanta. San Antonio, you know, the Houston, you know, disaster with San Antonio in game six at home. And I'm with Kevin Durant. Don't blame Golden State. Don't blame Kevin Durant for this lack of parity. Because this goes beyond, you know, Oklahoma City not having a good team. I mean, there are a lot of bad, poorly run. Or the main problem with the NBA right now has as much young talent as there's been in 25 years, easily. Even bad teams have talented players. Look at the teams that didn't make the playoffs and how many potential franchise players are on those teams. The problem with the NBA is you have too many bad, poorly run organizations. And you have too many of these owners who can't just make money and own a team and let people who know what they're doing run the basketball operations. They have to be out. They have to be, you know, Jerry Jones-like. You got a bunch of Jerry Jones wannabes in the NBA. The problem with that is before Jerry Jones became a complete just out of control, I'm going to make every decision, he did have Jimmy Johnson. And he did win those. He won those three Super Bowls because of Jimmy Johnson. These organizations don't have Jimmy Johnsons in their running their teams. You have you have a lot of these owners who just don't have a clue what they're doing, and there's nothing that the fans can do, because a lot of these owners they're not going to sell the teams. That's the problem with the NBA. Too many poorly run organizations. It's not the players. It's the organizations. 347-215-6180 is the call number. When we return, we will finally get to the season finale of Empire and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. Before we get to Empire, we were talking about the OTAs and who was showing up and who was not showing up. How about Kelvin Benjamin coming in at around 300 pounds? I mean, So Kelvin Benjamin, a receiver of the Carolina Panthers, who already is, you know, a physically imposing player when he's in shape. I mean, the guy is 6'5", 250 pounds, in shape, Kelvin Benjamin. You know, helped Florida, caught the game-winning touchdown, as we all know, if you're a Florida State fan, in the national championship game a few years back from Jameis Winston to beat Auburn. He comes in OTAs, and again, you, like, it's hard to tell when someone, you have to be completely out of shape for somebody to look at you on television and for it to stand out. To look bigger amongst football players is hard. So he comes in at about 280. And to me, I'm like, that might have been an excuse just not to go to OTAs. Like, that might have been an excuse to maybe, you know, you call in coach, like, coach, come on, coach, I'm out. I need to lose some weight, coach. Don't make me do it. Tell me about the play. Tell me the plays. You know, get some coaches. Or can I train off site without cameras around? What have you been doing? Again, these guys, athletes in general, football players, these guys, there's no off season. These guys train year round. So it's not like the old days where guys have second jobs, smoke cigarettes, then, you know, wouldn't start training until preseason. No, that's not today's. That's not 2017. These guys train year round. Maybe sometimes to their detriment. Sometimes it might even cause they might overtrain, but not Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, he comes in, like I said, he comes in at around 280 during OTAs. That might be an excuse. We were knocking Odell Beckham Jr. for not showing up. Maybe I probably wouldn't have had a problem with Kelvin Benjamin not showing up had I known, if you know, he was going to show up, you know, looking like, you know, the Goodyear blimp, basically. So Empire season three is over. It was so-so. So, okay, you want to blow up the car, almost kill Lucius and Cookie, that's fine. You can't have a situation where you, first of all, it was too much Hakeem. So I'm not buying the Hakeem storyline where he's just totally enraged by his daughter being kidnapped. He finds out who kidnaps them, and now all of a sudden he's going to go along with the people who kidnapped his daughter. Now he's going to side with them because he has that much hatred towards Lucius. That was bad writing. I'm not buying that. And to me, and like I said, to me, and this is where the show kind of gets scared. One of the kids had to go. I thought it was gonna be Andre. I either thought Andre or the what's the dude, Exhibit's character, Shine. I thought one of them was gonna go, or even blowing up. I thought Juliana could possibly go. Somebody of importance had to go. Someone had to be killed. So now you enter the story. Now you're gonna enter season four with, you know, the DeVos versus the Lions, okay, has a dynasty type, you know, Dallas type feel with, you know, Hatfields, McCoys, whatever. That's fine. Having Lucius in a coma, I mean, that storyline alone could take up an entire season. I mean, he could be in a coma for the entire season next year. He won't. But that's a big enough storyline alone to where you don't need a lot of subplots. It's too many things going into next season. Like, so you have the Lucius storyline. You have Juliana is still alive. I don't know what Hakeem has planned with, you know, the DeVar family. You have that going on. Andre now the head of the company. That's going on. They gave you too much for next season. So they gave you too. I mean, people are going to watch the ratings. The ratings are great, but kind of think the show might be headed towards it. It might be trying to wrap up the show. You have to come up with things like Lucius going back in the coma or Lucius getting back with Cookie. It might be trying to wrap it up. It really might be time for the show to wrap it up. They won't, because again, it's a cash cow. Now they're promoting it with with the Queen Latifah show, or not Queen Latifah show. Well, she Queen Latifah's on there. The show, the single, what's that show? Star. So they're moving. They're moving Star to Wednesday to 9 p.m. Moving Empire back to 8 p.m. On Wednesday nights. But you know, I wasn't. I expected more out of the Empire season finale. I expected a little bit more than that. As far as Twin Peaks goes, Twin Peaks is not for everybody. Twin Peaks is a definition of an acquired taste. It's not for everybody. Now, again, it was well written, and I give David Lynch credit, not following 1992, not trying to be too sentimental and have too much of the past. I really like what they've done as far as the visuals. I like the different locations. They brought back again enough of the characters to give you that feel of the old show. So I'm actually looking forward to Twin Peaks. I watched the first three episodes. I haven't seen episode four. The Showtime did a smart thing, because when a show is away for 25 years, there's no way that you're going to be connected to the plots or even the new subplots and new storylines. It's just, and consider how weird the show is. So they allowed you to watch the first four episodes on demand. They have 18 episodes in all in total. So I thought that was smart by Showtime, by the executives. I was into the first three episodes. I think there's a lot of potential for the season. I think they're gonna have a big season. I'm looking for it from a visual standpoint. They've done a wonderful job with the visuals with that show, with the cinematography. I like the evil Dale Cooper versus the good Dale Cooper. That what they've done with that. So not to give too much away, but again, it is not a show for everybody. It's not. It is an acquired taste, and you don't even bother watching it if you haven't seen the previous two seasons, or if you haven't watched the movie Fire Walk With Me. It's just pointless to watch. It's pointless to watch if you haven't seen that. So I think that. I think it's going to be a big season for Twin Peaks. Disappointed in Empire. Of course, you have Power coming up in less than a month. And Game of Thrones. I did see the trailer for Game of Thrones. That show, when Game of Thrones starts July, it's going to shut everything down. So if you're a show, the smartest thing to do, which Power did, is to push up your premiere date for the summer. Don't even try to compete with Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones is going to destroy every show, including Power, once they get started, once it gets premieres July 17th. We began the show talking about the narratives of the NBA Finals, of the upcoming NBA Finals. Everybody's going to be talking about Durant. Can he win an elusive championship? I don't think a player has had more pressure, an individual player has had more pressure than Durant since LeBron back in 2012, coming off a loss in 2011 as far as winning a championship. So, this is an absolute must-win for Kevin Durant. So that narrative, where we talked about the LeBron versus Jordan narrative, we talked about even with Mike Brown versus Cleveland, that the narrative that I'm paying attention to, that nobody's talking, Draymond Green, of course, always will make for some news, as he never will be able to shut up. The narrative that I'm paying attention to is Steph Curry, and can he bounce back from basically two subpar finals? Can he bounce back from being embarrassed last year by LeBron James, being outplayed by Kyrie Irving, Cleveland going out their way to make sure that they put Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving hitting the game-winning three for the championship, one of the biggest shots in NBA history, over Steph Curry. So Steph Curry had a rough finals last year. And right now he's playing as well as he's ever played. He looks like the two-time unanimous MVP that he has been. Before this year, coming into this year. So Steph Curry is the guy that I'm watching in this series to possibly have a big series. And we'll see what that happens. We'll see what happens with that. Again, we'll have plenty of time to talk about the NBA Finals Thursday, June 1st. Both these teams should be well rested. I will see you then. Have a great, great rest of the weekend. So long. Before you say so long, we do have a big announcement. We're going to go over our live time. Talk to some people at a local bar that I often go to for happy hours. It has the best happy hour in the city. We are going to be doing a live broadcast there starting probably it might even start as early as this week. Definitely second or third week in June. Definitely before the finals is over. So we're going to take the show on the road, do a live broadcast there. All right, you know, got the heads up. It's a matter of scheduling, it's a matter of where I'm going to be sitting. I will keep you updated with that. But we're going to take our show on the road, you know, get off my couch and go on the road, and I'll get updates and details to be announced later on. Now you can have a great weekend.